On this holiday weekend, you're hearing some of our favorite interviews from previous shows. Joining me now is religion historian Adam English, whose new book, The Saint Who Would Be Santa Claus, The True Life and Trials of Nicholas of Myra, has just been published by Baylor University Press. Adam, welcome.
Thank you so much, Walton, for having me on your show.
Talk about St. Nicholas and the way he gained the reputation for giving gifts to people.
St. Nicholas is a early 4th century bishop of Myra, which is located on the southern coast of what is today now Turkey, up against the Mediterranean Sea. His connection with gift-giving comes from a particularly wonderful story about him. Early on in his life, before he is made bishop, he is just a young man, has inherited a certain sum of money, and hears about a man in town who has 3 daughters and is on the door of destitution. They've become so desperately poor that the man is considering selling off his daughters. And Nicholas decides to do something about it. He bags up a bag of gold and in the middle of the night, anonymously tosses it through the man's window. The money is found in the morning and used for one of the girls as a dowry so that she might marry out of her circumstance. He repeats the act 2 more times so that each of the other girls might be able to marry themselves out of poverty. And so it's a wonderful tale of generosity. And you can clearly see the connections with Santa Claus. Later tradition will embellish that story and add to it and say, and Nicholas one time came by the window and found it locked, and so dropped the bag of gold down the chimney where it landed in a stocking that was hanging by the fire to dry.
How long did it take for this association with Christmas to occur?
Well, you know, the association with gift-giving was, of course, there from the beginning. So that by the 1100s, nuns in France were making little toys and leaving them on the doorsteps of children and signing them from St. Nicholas. But the connection with Santa Claus, that is a product of the early 19th century America, especially in New York, where prominent New Yorkers are trying to find some traditions, some roots that are European, and they're reconnecting with their Dutch heritage. And so to be Dutch was to celebrate St. Nicholas, Sinterklaas, to make St. Nicholas cookies and to give gifts on St. Nicholas Day. So by them retrieving St. Nicholas or Sinterklaas, and there you can see even the word morphing into Santa Claus, was all part of this attempt to create some traditions, to reconnect with some Dutch roots. And then it, in the American context, gets broadened out and becomes a universally loved tradition.
How much of the way we stereotypically visualize Santa Claus today, as well as the whole scene, the North Pole, the reindeer, the ho-ho-ho, how much of that was born of the Coca-Cola advertising campaign?
A good bit of it was, in terms of the visual image we think of Santa Claus having, it really is a product of the early 20th century, as artists are now trying to represent this new Americanized St. Nicholas and depict him warmly and nostalgically and inside the home. And so Haddon Sundblom, working for the Coca-Cola company, really has the classic picture that we think of, the rotund grandfather character who's jolly and cheerful and dressed in red from head to toe with the belt and the boots and everything. That really is a product of the Coca-Cola advertisements, and others were depicting a similar kind of image. And of course, you know, as you see that standard picture, you think of it in your mind, obviously there is almost nothing there that connects him with a Christian bishop. You know, he's lost the crozier staff and the mitre hat and the stole and, you know, everything that might connect him with the Christian faith. Although in Europe, most all of the European countries and locales still celebrate St. Nicholas, and there you still see him very much in his bishop's garb.
You write also that St. Nicholas had real significance in church history. Would you comment a little bit about that?
He lived at an extraordinarily important time. When he was born, Christianity was a persecuted minority religion. By his death, it has not only been legalized, but it has become the favored religion of the empire. He oversaw a lot of that. He also attended the very famous Council of Nicaea, which your church history buffs out there will recognize as maybe the most important council in all of Christian history. Mm-hmm. He was part of that, arguing for the faith. It really is at that council that we finally really hammer out who is Jesus Christ. And, of course, if Christianity is anything, it is about Jesus Christ.
Right.
But, again, just to point out that he lived at a very critical moment in our church history.
Isn't it ironic that today a lot of people see Santa Claus as representing the materialistic side of Christmas, when in fact St. Nicholas represents just the opposite?
Although I would certainly add that from the very beginning of the early 19th century, he was even then connected with commercialism and advertisers and things like that.
Yeah.
But St. Nicholas, of course, gives us a model of charity, generosity, helping your neighbor out. And what I was really surprised to find was that St. Nicholas was also equally concerned with justice, social justice, civic justice. And so a lot of the other stories have him doing things that we would expect maybe a lawyer or a good politician or a judge doing. And that definitely surprised me. You know, we think about Santa Claus at the North Pole with his lists of naughty and nice. In that is an echo of this character trait that is there in the real St. Nicholas, as someone who is very concerned with naughty and nice, with virtue, and work tirelessly for social justice.
I've been speaking with Adam English, author of the new book, The Saint Who Would Be Santa Claus, The True Life and Trials of Nicholas of Myra. Dr. English is Associate Professor of Theology and Philosophy at Campbell University Divinity School in North Carolina. It's a fascinating book, Adam, and I want to thank you both for writing it and then for being willing to come and tell the story of it on State of Belief Radio.
Welton, it's been an honor to be with you.